Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, dam builders and semi-aquatic architects. My name is Anna, and with me is the one that I journey down the flowing river of life with, your host, Jared.
Hello.
We will be your host for this episode, and we are so honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Today, we are at the Two Top Table, where we will be looking at Timbertown, designed by Ryan Boucher, artwork created by Isabella Overturf, and published by Alley Cat Games.
Timbertown is a two-player open drafting tile placement puzzle game where you're competing to build the best beaver town on the riverbank. Each round, new tiles float down the river, offering different buildings and features you can add to your growing city. But you've got to claim them before they drift too far downstream. As an added wrinkle, each tile you draft must be placed in the same column from which you took it, making the timing of every choice matter. Is Timbertown Beaver Dam strong, or will it wash down river with the current? Find out as we discuss.
Well, Jared, as we have played and enjoyed and contemplated this game.
Yes.
I have a question for you, burning question. If you were to build your own town, you know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving this week, actually.
Sure.
You know, if you were planting a colony, would you say?
A colony?
Yes. What building would you make sure was included for your colony's ultimate success?
Well, you know, every good colony, town, city,
beaver dam,
civilization as a whole, human race, we need connection.
You're going to say a game shop, aren't you?
We need love and care for one another. And I think every good colony needs a game cafe. I mean, I just feel like it's necessary.
There you go.
I feel like it would just improve morale. We would all be smarter because of the amount of puzzling and math that we'd be doing. And there'd be some good eating. What about you?
Well, I hear you on the love and the eating and the games. But I just want to build a really tall tower.
Like Tower of Babel kind of tower?
What? No, that one was doomed, so probably not that one.
What kind of tower are we talking about
here? Maybe not quite skyscraper, because if we're thinking colony, you know, we're starting just with timber here. Yeah. But I think that tall towers are just wonderful. And I think they're useful to look out for wildfires and to look out for enemies. They could be useful to install a bell for a citywide gathering area or particularly maybe a warning, for example. And I think if you're going to survey a new land, it's nice to have a nice high tower to survey it from. Towers are great.
That's fair.
Yep.
Okay. I'm not going to knock it.
Thanks.
All right. Well, let's get into this game, shall we? And we'll talk about how to play, and then we'll discuss.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Timbertown is a two-player game where each player is going to have a 4x4 grid. You are working to build the best town possible on this 4x4 grid, and you are also trying to connect your buildings because, I mean, it's just no good if you have all these buildings and you can't get from one to the other.
You connect them via paths that are on the tiles.
Indeed. Now, in the middle of these two boards is a river. This river is made up of four tiles that can hold three smaller square tiles. And next to the river are tiles that are going to replenish the tiles that are already on the river. You want to make sure that as your river is flowing downstream, which I'll talk about in just a second, that you select these building tiles to go into your town at the right time. Because if I am picking from a building in column one, it must go in column one. It can go in A, B, C, or D, but it must go in column one. I can't put it in column 2, 3, or 4 until it is in front of that column. Now, once both players have gone, then the river flows. We will take the last row from the river away from the back, move it to the front to be replenished, and everything else moves downstream. That's an overview of the structure of the gameplay before we actually get into it itself. Each player on their turn has a couple different actions that they can take. They will have one main action, and then they can have some free actions if they are able to. Their main action is to either claim a tile from the river like we talked about, or they can place their raft token on a particular tile to reserve it to claim it later for free on a later turn. So then free actions would be either claim the building tile we just talked about from your raft, or you can use one of your construction tokens. A construction is a type of tile that can be claimed and added to your city, or sorry, town. It really is a town, it's not a city. And depending on what type of icon that you took from the construction zone, you are going to be able to use that token later, whether it is a crane or a dam. The dam can be turned in to be able to claim an additional tile from the river on the same turn. The crane allows you to place your tile anywhere you want to on your board, still following all other placement rules, but ignoring the column that it has to be in. There are 7 different types of building tiles in the game. There are homes, markets, workshops, parks, temples, the construction sites that we talked about, and the beaver tiles. All these have different scoring mechanisms that will change from game to game, because with the exception of the beaver tile and the construction sites, the other 5 have 4 different cards, and only one of them will be used each game. So you have a variety of options. I believe the publisher has claimed that there's over 1,000 combinations to be able to play together. Just a tad of replayability. So play will go back and forth. You will be trying to place your different buildings in such a way to match these building tile scoring expectations. And these tile cards are the same for both players. Once both players either have all 16 spots filled in, or there is no longer a legal play, then the game is over. There's some additional scoring if you're the first one to finish your board, as well as some other bonuses, but that is the gist. And then so whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. With that, let's discuss.
Well, all right, Jared.
Yes.
I'm curious what originally drew you to this game.
So, you know, we love two-player games.
Yeah.
And you and I both like to build things. We like building towns and games. We like Civ on the computer. We like Legos and things like that. So we're really into that. And right now, I feel like in the gaming industry, there are a ton of different city-building two-player games that have this quick, play it in 30 minutes, and let's see what happens. Because there are so many of those, there's this, of course, this need to stand out and try something new. For this one, the river mechanic was very interesting to me because instead of having your pick of the litter to kind of decide how you want to build your city, you've got to work within this timing mechanism to be able to put them in the right spot and also optimize all the things that the buildings actually do themselves. Right. So I thought that was a neat puzzle, and I'm not going to go into it too much, but you know, we tried Tiny Towns and that one didn't hit as well for you. I remember you telling me that you really didn't care for it.
It was fine.
And I think, too, this one just clips at a better pace than Tiny Towns does. But we haven't reviewed Tiny Towns. You'll have to find out about that game on your own. I just feel like there's a lot to think about. And also, it stays within a 30-ish minute time frame, which I really like.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I'll say that, I mean, in terms of the draw, I love City Builders. I really do. I think it's very fun. This one, all City Builders have a puzzle-y component to them because most of them have some sort of component where how you arrange the tiles matters for endgame scoring.
Right.
This one had that component of how you arrange the tiles matters for endgame scoring. But, like you said, the in-game scoring is different for every tile apart from the red and the brown. The red and the brown have the same scoring mechanic every single game. Right. Every other tile could have a different scoring mechanic each game, which means that you can't necessarily puzzle out ahead of time or pre-figure out your favorite strategy and just run with that every single time. You can't figure out that these two tile types work really well together because you might not get that same scoring mechanism for both those tile types next time. And in addition to that puzzle-y component of it, there's the puzzle component of, like you were saying, the river, where it affects what row you can put your tiles in. If you're going to put your tiles in the rows that are lower down, you have to wait several turns with that tile just sitting there and somebody else maybe being able to take it before you can take that tile. And lastly, the puzzly component is that all of the paths have to connect.
Yeah.
And it's not like in some path games where just any old path will connect to itself. No, I mean, there are paths with one, there are tiles, sorry, with one, two, three, or four path options. And so if you play a tile that doesn't have a path off to the side, then you are not allowed to play a tile next to it that has a path off to the side because the paths can't connect to anything except for each other or running off the edge of the board.
Mm-hmm.
So multiple levels of puzzle components in this city builder, I think, is probably the thing that stood out to me the first couple times we played it. I was like, oh, wow, this makes it really different. You're not just trying to figure out the overall strategy of the game because that changes. And there's a couple of different puzzles you're trying to figure out throughout it, not just one.
Yeah, I think the paths were actually a really good add because yeah. I love the tension of I need this building because of what I'm working on, but the paths are terrible. And I'm running a huge risk by taking this path now because later I might need a different building and it doesn't connect correctly.
Yeah.
And then I'm in a really bad spot. So I love that tension. I think that's a very good add in a game like this where you're already thinking about putting the right combination of buildings together, making sure that you're drafting in the right location. It just adds a little bit more. And I love that the game itself is very thinky, but it's not overwhelming.
It's fast thinking, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because at any point in time, as a two-player game, at any point in time, you only have three new tile options. So if you, and there may be more tiles on the board, because there may be more tiles that are further down the river, but every single time when you move the bottom piece of the river up, you get three new tiles on that river. So you're only adding three new options every single round, which I think helps it move quickly.
Right.
Even though you're trying to keep all the pieces of the puzzle and all the things that you need in your mind at any point in time.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Another thing that I really like about this game, and I didn't know about it till we got into it, I love how important reserving is in this game.
Yes.
Using that raft to be able to reserve on round one, when it's in column one, knowing I'm not using it till three or four. But I only have the one raft to start with. So do I burn a spot to get more rafts, or do I try to maximize that one raft as best I can? Most games that I play, though, reserving is more of like this afterthought where it's there so you don't, quote-unquote, waste your turn.
Right.
But it really doesn't do that much for you. Whereas this one, it can be huge to be able to reserve at the right time.
Yes, because you could have a wonderful piece, but you can't play it till row three, so you want to reserve it. Now, we were able to use, I agree, the reserving aspect of this game is beautiful, and you don't end up losing a turn necessarily. I think some games when you reserve, it takes the place of your turn. This technically takes the place of your turn, but then because you can trade in your reserve for free later on and still get a pick, you still get the same number of picks overall. You're kind of just kicking it down the road a little bit. And we were able to use the reserving aspect to do what you said, where, man, there's something really good, but I need it later on. And also to reserve pieces that we knew the other person needed so that the other person wouldn't get it. Because if you reserve, eventually the tiles fall off the waterfall. Yep. They fall off the bottom of the river because when you move that bottom river piece up to the top, any tiles that are left on it get dumped. And if your raft is still reserving a tile on there, that tile gets dumped and you just get your raft back. So you don't lose your raft. You do lose extra rafts that you might get through construction tiles later on in the game if you do that, but you don't lose your original raft if you do that. So multiple levels to that raft piece. I liked the two extra types of tiles are the construction tiles, which basically give you power-ups. So they can give you an extra raft to reserve things. They can give you a crane, which lets you put things in different rows than the one that you took them from. Or they can give you a dam, which gives you two picks. And I feel like those could be crucial. Now, you are wasting, quote unquote, a spot. Now, they are worth 2 points apiece. And so, I mean, 2 points might be better than some other building type that's not going to score any bonuses. And then they give you this construction component as well. And I remember one game we played, I felt like it was better that I did a construction piece and got a dam, because then I get 2 picks later on of some stuff that I wouldn't have gotten, because you and I were both going for the same thing. You were collecting all of the yellow types of tiles, all the house tiles, and I wasn't being able to get any bonuses. So I was able to use that at a good time where I could get 2 houses without you being able to get them all. And I would have only gotten one had it been otherwise. But
sure.
So,
because you do need to either take a tile, reserve, or pass.
Yes.
And passing, like, there is a time for it, but most of the time it feels brutal.
Yeah.
And so to have flexibility later on, like, you might not like any of the tiles that are out right now, but like you're talking about, to be able to hold and get it later.
Yeah.
That's the other advantage of, like, of reserving. You're still doing something on your turn. You're not just passing.
Yes.
Because passing most of the time just feels rough.
Yeah, I don't know, because you would think that you'd get done at the same time, but you don't always get done at the same time. Because if somebody plays a dam, then they get 2 pieces, and now they have 1 piece more on their board than you. Or if somebody passes, then they're not taking a piece. Now they have 1 piece less than you. So the first person to finish their whole board does get 5 extra points, right? But gameplay continues until the other person is finished with their board, too, if they can. You know, if they've arranged their paths to where something actually can't go there because they don't have any paths that will connect properly, then they don't get to do that last
Well, piece. Or if you get stuck, like if you filled all, like the last game that we played, if I did not maneuver things the way that I did, I would have run out of turns, because once everything falls off the river, that's it. So you can get stuck where you don't have enough, because you only still pick up one at a time unless you have your raft. So you've got to be careful about when you pick things up. So there's a couple different ways that you can't finish your board.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. If you're saying if you had, for example, 2 slots left in your last row, you would only get one pick.
That's right.
Before that last row fell off. So then you'd still have one that was missing. Yeah, that's right. So it is interesting that you could not finish at the same time. I mean, I think passing could be strategic. I know one game when I passed, it was because I really needed a corner path piece. And there was a corner piece, but I was really wanting another tile type that would give me more bonuses. And so I passed, and I was able to get a corner path piece. You also alternate who goes first pick each round. And so if you know you've got first pick next round, you're going to get whatever you want out of the top row. That might be a time to pass, because then you might get something better next round. So. Good mechanics in this game, I guess is what we're saying.
Yeah, well, and you can put a lot of good combinations together. I mean, we haven't even talked about it yet, but, you know, you have the different scoring cards that can kind of work together to some degree, and you're kind of trying to map out your whole board and then tactically adjust with whatever comes out. But, you know, for me, one of the things that I found really cool is figuring out how to put those plays together where you're deciding when to pick. Because there were multiple times I found, like, I would reserve something and then got to pick 2 at a time because of the raft and then the extra action right before it was my turn to go first again. So I had the 2, and then I could go ahead and claim the next one of whatever came out to really give me that flexibility. So just, there's a lot of flexibility in this game, and you wouldn't think it at first glance because it's kind of just tiles flowing down a river kind of thing. But then you start to see it and you're like, oh, this is really cool. But I do think it's also, that's the thing I mentioned earlier that I want to come back to again. It has a lot for you to think about, but it's still accessible. Like, all the cards that are put out, like, are very easily understood. We even noticed there was I want to reach out to Alley Cat and make sure, but I think it is a misprint on one, but we were able to kind of read through and be like, okay, based on what we're reading here, this is how it actually scores, so we're going to go with that. But outside of, like, that, there was no difficulty figuring out how cards work. So it was very easy to kind of just jump back into and then start playing.
I will say one exception. Actually, okay. I will say 2 exceptions because these were 2 things, not that I didn't like about the game as a whole, but that I think could have been done better. So I will say that both of us had to pick up construction tiles and say, what in the world is that? Is it a dam? Is it a crane? Or is it a raft? It was difficult to tell from the artwork easily which construction tile had come up. So each of the tiles have pretty artwork and the paths and the forest and everything. Yeah. And you want that because it makes your board look gorgeous at the end. And then they also have a symbol in the corner that tells you what color type they are.
Yeah.
So, for example, houses are yellow, markets are orange, you know, so on and so forth. And so you can see very easily this is a red construction tile because it has the iconography in the corner that shows this is a red tile. But you have to look at the tile and see, does this look like they're using a crane or a raft or a dam in this picture? And sometimes we had to pick it up and look at it. It wasn't easy to tell. So that's one little critique, but it goes along with the bonus of, yeah. But I mean, it was nice that the artwork was like that. You know?
It is interesting because on that point, like I really agree with you that it's weird. I don't know, is the artist and the person who did the graphic design the same person? Because I love the art, but then thinking about the graphics could have been better, in my opinion. Because there were even like seeing sometimes the orange market cards would come out and I would like have to double take and look at those and like, is that really a market card or is it something else? Because it's just, it's so small.
Yeah.
And it looks so similar to like a red.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, which card am I looking at? And then like you mentioned with the construction across the board that I've seen gets a lot of frustration
from other players too.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were always able to figure it out, but it did hinder the flow of the river
because
we were picking the tiles up and having to look at them and say, what is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what your second comment is, because I do agree with that 100%, but I still think the gameplay itself is very accessible for newer gamers.
Yes. Yes. I would agree. You were just saying the thing about the tiles being easy to read. And I would say construction tiles were not easy to read because we had to figure them out. And I guess that's a question for Isabella. You're saying did she do the graphic design and the artwork?
Yeah.
Or was she working with anybody else that added that later, potentially? The other thing that was confusing for us, and this isn't necessarily with the artwork, but it's with the instructions and the iconography. The first time we played the game, we could not figure out how to score the brown tiles, which is the beaver tiles.
Yeah.
Because maybe you can read what it says in the instruction book, but because I'm probably not going to get it word for word. But essentially it was saying if your beaver could start at one end of your board and move to the other, but it used left and right. And left and right get flipped depending on what side of the river you're on. So that was confusing to us. We were like, oh, do I have to put my beaver tile on the left, but Jared has to put it on the right because technically he is mirror image of my board. And then we didn't know if he had to start on the beaver tile and move all the way to the end and if he couldn't do that. And I remember we researched it quite heavily, looking at the cards, looking at the rule book, looking at what other people said online. I think we figured out the correct way to play it, but it was difficult to understand the first time that we played it. And just in case anybody's listening and wants to make sure that we did it the way we played it was wherever the beaver tile is placed, the beaver starts at one end of the board and has to be able to move to the other side of the board by either going over or up or down. He doesn't have to move in a straight line. He just has to be able to travel from one side of the board to the other. We did not have him start on the beaver tile. I remember that was a question we had because I was like, well, if I'm going to put a beaver tile, I can only put it on this side because he's got to travel over. So we didn't do that. We had him start if we had a beaver tile on our board, we just said, okay, if the beaver can start on one side of the board and follow paths and get to the other side, we scored the 5 points.
Yeah. And just to make sure that, because I think you're saying it, but I wanted to clarify this specific part of it. You have to be able to get from A1 to D4 specifically.
Yes.
And however that path connects.
Yes.
And I think the whole idea, like the beaver just really needs to be placed on that tile that it was placed on, like when it first is placed.
Because, but it doesn't have to start on that tile.
Oh, but the path has to go through that tile.
Yeah.
But the confusion, I think, came into play because the card, the scoring card, and the rules, I don't feel like are aligned in their wording.
Uh-huh.
And that's what made it hard for us to be like, okay, are we just going in a straight line? But then if you look at the rule book, it says this. And then so it was just a little complicated.
Yeah.
But once you play a few times, it like makes total sense.
It did. But I'm thinking about you're saying that the iconography on the cards is easy to read. Those were two aspects where we did not find it easy to read. The scoring aspect of the beaver card or the construction iconography on the cards.
I got you.
So
no,
I was saying those two exceptions.
That makes sense. I was thinking more about the fact that like, so in your first game, they're like, use these scoring cards.
Yes.
Because they're a little bit easier to understand. When we went to the quote-unquote more advanced, it was very easy to be like, okay, I get what these do.
Yeah.
It was not a hard transition from the easy ones, quote-unquote, to the other ones.
Yes, yes. It was the scoring examples on the cards were very well done to help you understand.
For the most part, yeah. Okay. But yeah, so I thought it was accessible. Did you feel like it was something that was pretty easy to get into? Like, I'm thinking about it from like a newer gamer's perspective.
I think I'd say yes. The first game, we practically sat down and played. And I know we had the book open and we're kind of looking some stuff up. Like how in the world do you score the beaver? You know, we looked that up for a while. But we sat down and played, and I was surprised at how quickly we went through it.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that potentially for some of your newer gamers, like I said, you've got levels of puzzle going on.
Sure.
And so that might be intimidating for some newer gamers. I also think some people might just think it's okay to not figure out every single puzzle on the first playthrough, which is okay too. You know, if they want to focus on getting their paths to line up and just at the end be surprised by how their building scored, you know, it wouldn't be a bad way to play your first game and kind of do it by levels. And the first game, I remember that we played with the recommended cards, was incredibly accessible. Subsequent games that we've played with the more advanced cards feel more puzzly.
Gotcha.
Because it's the cards weren't necessarily designed to fit together in their strategy the way that that first set of cards was. And so you're having to figure out from scratch, how would these fit together in a strategy that I might create?
No, that's fair.
Okay. So, but yeah, I'd say overall, yes. Unless you've got a newer gamer who's very detail-oriented, wants to understand every detail of how everything needs to fit together, then you might get a little bit of analysis paralysis, having trouble knowing what to do next is what that means, and turns taking a long time as they try to remember all the details and figure out all the puzzles that they figured out.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's a little bit of a risk of that, but we didn't have that problem in any of our games.
What about, is there anything about the game that keeps you from achieving what you want this game to be? Other than, I mean, we've talked about the graphics, but like from a gameplay perspective.
Well, I would say just thank you to Alley Cat Games that this is a city builder where you get to finish your city. You get to fill up your whole entire board. Drives me insane when you get to those city builders and then the game ends and you're like, hang on, I wanted to do XYZ.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's fine. You know, I can.
You can deal.
I can deal. but at the end of this one, you're actually done with your town.
You are.
Which is very fun because your board is filled up. And you might be disappointed, like, oh, I was hoping for this type of building over here instead of this type. Yeah, you still have a little bit of regrets. But overall, that was a very fun part of it that made it feel like a big accomplishment when you're finished. So I'd say no, I don't think so. I feel like it plays so well at two players. I don't even think I'd want it to play more than two players, honestly.
I think the river would become a problem with more than two players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel like it.
Sorry, I just went to player count. Do you want to say anything? Yeah, let's backtrack.
No, we're fine. We're good here. No, I completely agree that it would be a problem with more than two. I don't think I would enjoy it because like the river flows really well at two, because it's very easy to keep things moving and you can keep the river between the two of you. Like it's supposed to be set up so that you can both see it pretty easily. I do think that, you know, personally as someone with bad eyesight, I wish it was bigger, but I understand why they went with the smaller box, which means a little bit smaller tiles. The tiles are nice quality, you know, as well. So
yeah,
I don't want to take
wooden.
Anything away from it. Oh yeah. It's got great components. And,
yeah.
And like we talked about before, the artwork's great. So there's no really critiques there, and I agree, from a player count, you do want to keep it in that two-player range. Going back to if I have any critiques, I don't know. Like, I think I think I really enjoy it. I'll say it this way. I really enjoy it for this genre of 30-minute city builders.
Okay.
I think it hits in a very good spot for that genre. I personally, as a gamer who loves the ones where we have all kinds of stuff splayed out all over the table,
where you can build the skyscrapers.
Yeah. I don't know how often I will reach back for this one when, you know, I think about those bigger ones. But of this, like, two-player, build it in 30 minutes, and we're going to have some unique twists on it depending on which one you're doing, I really like this one.
Yeah.
And if I was being asked, hey, we're looking for a date night game, and gave me some criteria that fit with this style or this genre, I would definitely recommend this one because, like I said, it's so accessible and it's so easy to pick up.
So what you're saying is that you need a Timbertown of the future second edition to come out where you're doing Civilization and you're building up from your wooden structures and it's a longer game.
Maybe I need Timber City.
That, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of the future. They're going to progress.
Beavers have evolved.
Yeah, I mean, they've already evolved in this game, but they're going to evolve again.
Yeah, they're going to evolve again.
That's right.
We're I mean, we're already, they've got temples and markets and all kinds. I mean, we're way advanced here.
But
there's no
still
reason
wooden,
we can't do.
Because beavers, well, yeah, I mean, they've got to cut it with their teeth. That's what
I mean, let's not put anything heretical in the game. Come on. If we were to move away from wood with beavers, that would be crazy.
It's true. It's true. Hey, do you know I learned a fun fact about beavers the other day?
Tell me your fun fact about beavers.
Okay. I was thinking about it. Beavers, if you look at x-rays of their skulls, their teeth, like, go way back inside
their entire
skull. So it, like, goes, like, all the way up, like, where our nose would be.
Yeah.
And it goes, like, all the way back across where their chin would be because their teeth grow constantly because they get so worn down by the wood. But here's the cool thing. They get worn down, but they never get dull. Do you know why?
Why?
Do you already know all these fun facts?
I did know everything except for about what you're about to tell me.
Oh, okay. All right. So they get worn down, but they never get dull because they're made out of two types of material.
What?
So have you ever noticed that beavers' teeth look orange? Like real beavers, if you look at them?
I can't say that I've noticed that.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, if you look at real beavers, I've always like, gosh, they've got like a horrible like tooth problem. But really, the like enamel or whatever it is on the outside of their teeth has iron in it.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's orange because that, you know, iron gets that orangey rust colored when it's exposed to the elements or whatever. And so the enamel on the outside of their teeth has like this iron ore in it that is really sharp, but it's way harder than the second layer of their teeth, which is just like that regular soft kind of dentin like all of us have. And so as the dentin wears down faster and the iron wears down slower. And so it's like constantly, their teeth are constantly sharp because of that.
So they're just constantly wielding axes is what you're telling
me. Yeah, because the dentin like is worn down and the iron stays worn down less. And so it's just sharp. I don't know. It's just really
cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody should go look at pictures of beaver skulls on the internet because it's insane how much of their skull is just made out of tooth because they just grow teeth their entire life. You're looking up a picture now, aren't you?
I'm not.
Oh, okay. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. So even if we do Timber City.
That's what I want. That's my critique is give me Timber City.
Yes. So we do Timber City. Just in case Alicat wants to take our ideas.
For free.
For free, yeah. you've got this kind of Timber Town is your first level. And then you build up. You advance to the next level.
Yeah.
And it can be a bigger board. You have to actually
build up.
Yeah, you can actually build up
on
your levels.
I think it's a done deal.
And as they go through their beaver history and evolution.
Coming to Kickstarter 2026.
There you go. Don't make announcements for Alicat. We're just giving him ideas.
just trying to speak it into existence.
Oh, is that what we do?
Yeah. All right, real quick, Anna. This game is 30 buckaroos at Amazon right now. You feel like that's a fair deal?
That sounds like, yes.
I agree.
That sounds 100% like a fair exactly shape. What this game should cost.
High quality components, yeah. Good artwork, good game. Like, you have several wooden components in there, too.
Yep.
Like, I'm all for it. Cool. All right. So, Anna, we'll wrap it up with, you know, who do you think this game is for and any final thoughts that you might have?
Sure, yeah. I think, like you said, this game would be good for a date night. It doesn't take too terribly long. It's very accessible in terms of the ability to sit down and start playing. Unless maybe you're with somebody that has never played a city builder before, then you might have to explain a little bit of how you're going to be taking one tile at a time, building this city, and there's certain how you arrange it is going to affect in-game scoring or something like that. But I think definitely anybody that's played a city builder before could sit down and almost just play the game, looking at a few of the extra rules like the river component and those kinds of things. I know that after we played it, I was debating if I wanted to try it with our oldest daughter the next day. And I decided against that because it has the different layers of puzzle. And I thought maybe a simpler city builder game would work better to get her into it. And so I think that's a thought that, you know, you can take or leave. So, yeah, it's a good thinker, but it still feels light. You feel very accomplished at the end because you've built an entire city, but it still goes fast. So, yeah, who would you recommend it for?
No, I completely agree with all your sentiment there. And I do think that it's for anyone who wants a quick 30-minute game that they can get a lot out of it, is what I would add.
There's a lot out of it. Mm-hmm.
I do think this is definitely aimed at people who are either on the lighter end or prefer or are newer to the hobby. And I think that this does a great job of speaking to that audience. And I am very happy that I played it. Like I said, it's got a lot to it, a lot of meat on the bone, and I've enjoyed every one of my plays. So I do, like, I always try to think about it from, if I wasn't a podcaster, would I play this game a lot more? And I think that is true that I would. Like, I think especially with how busy our lives are, I would value this game a lot because it's something that we can fit in to a tighter window than some of our bigger games. I also really like that I could take this game with me to work and I could play it with one of my buddies as a two-player game over lunch.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like I said, it's a smaller footprint. Like, it's not huge. And so you could play it at the lunch table, and you play it in that 30-minute window, and it's all good. So, and again, it's very accessible. So I think it has a lot of room for a lot of people.
You know, and
I think if I wasn't a podcaster, yeah, I would just, and so I'm speaking to everybody else except for me, except for any content creators that listen, I would value this even higher if I wasn't a content creator. Yeah. I think what I'm trying to say is this game is accessible to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it does a great job of speaking to both new gamers and someone who's wanting a little bit more crunch.
Yeah. And because it has enough puzzle and enough levels to figure out that an experienced gamer is not going to be bored, even though it is a shorter game. Just because it's a shorter game, I think sometimes shorter games are still good for experienced gamers. Because not everybody has a whole afternoon to dedicate every time they want to play a game.
We don't, that's for sure.
Nope.
Well, thank you for taking the time to listen. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on this game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I totally get it. Check out our website at thegametailpodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametailpodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashton McCaffrey for cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chesslin for how to play background music. Join us next week as we head over to, I think it's the kids' table, if I've got my head on straight. No guarantees there. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.